Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow-wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Welcome to this week's edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast, the ISOPod, as it's become known, as we come to you from our lounge rooms to yours. My name is Lauren Wood from the Herald Sun. I'm joined by my colleagues, John Anderson and Scott Gullen. Ando, the big one for this week, whether it's kite flying or otherwise, is hubs. Much like the word unprecedented that we've heard a zillion times over the last 3 or 4 weeks, the word hub has just come into its own, hasn't it? Much like revelers on New Year's Eve. The quarantine hubs, what's your take? Would it work? Where do we sit on sort of parking teams around the country to get these games away?
First time I heard of that was our dear friend from the north, Peter Volandis, speaking about rugby league.
Rugby league. Please correct yourself.
Yeah, was he going up to... I think he went up to northern Queensland at one stage, and there was even talk. Was Ireland mentioned? Did I hear that? He certainly said Ireland. But look, Robbo's story today in the Herald Sun, I thought it made a lot of sense, I've got to say, about playing footy at the MCG. And then you've got other grounds as training venues very close by, such as Gosha's Paddock, obviously Punt Road, and Collingwood's home training centre. That obviously you've got plenty of accommodation with the Pullman, I think it's called these days, and a couple of others in the area. So, I don't know whether Robbo thought everything up himself, but if he did, he's a smarter boy than I thought he was.
The rugby league people have had it thrown to them that the Whit Sundays might be offering a little slice of paradise to park its teams on, which would probably be a far more, attractive prospect than the depths of winter in Jollymont. But Scotty, are we dreaming? Is this going to realistically happen? I know Dangerfield spoke on Tuesday morning. Jared Waitley came out calling it immoral. Are we really just kind of clutching at straws, or do you think it could actually work?
Well, Danger's ahead of the players, and you know, his initial reaction was, "I don't know whether this can work." And I mean, I know the AFL's on record saying we will do anything we can to get this thing going, but you need the players on board for that. They clearly have to stay away from their families for X amount of time. You'd have security guards with guns at fences, not allowing anyone near this. Look, it's very impressive research from Mark, our chief. I don't think he knew where the Pullman or the Sofitel was, but his details is exemplary as usual. But I can't see this happening, to be brutally honest.
What's our biggest hurdle, Ando? Is it the being away from the families, or is it just the flat-out execution of this?
Being away, well, both. I've been away from the families. Obviously, that's dependent on what time span we're talking about. If it's 6-7 weeks just to get a lot of football played in that time, they're talking longer than that. And personally, I guess cricketers used to go overseas, Australian cricketers, and it was normal for them to go without their wives or families for 3 months at a time. Just on that, and hearing what Scotty just said, the reality is, if you go to any big sport in, say, the world, say Australia, and let's talk cricket, and India is obviously coming here for a 4-test series, 3 1-days, 3 T20s this summer. That's massive. That's millions and millions of dollars, close to $100 million. And right now, Cricket Australia would be thinking that's not going to happen. So they've got to have a contingency plan. So it comes very heavily down to domestic sport and getting as much of that as we possibly can. So you'd be finding something like surfing, for instance, that the Australian surfers would all be getting together and think about what can we do? Can we form our own smaller group? Same with drivers. I mean, Daniel Ricciardo's in Australia. You could even see Daniel Ricciardo driving supercars. Something like that, which would be really nifty. Whether his contract with Renault would allow that, that's probably debatable. But I think we're going to see a whole lot of things happen in sport that we didn't think were going to happen. And unfortunately, it's not going to involve international teams because they just won't be flying. And we virtually know that already, that no one's going to fly into Australia as an international sporting team within the rest of this year anyway.
Well, that's been the report, Leo Schlink's report on page 3 of the Tuesday Herald Sun, wasn't it? Surrounded a few more future events like the Melbourne Cup, which is obviously incredibly international heavy, the Australian Open tennis. So, I mean, I know footy kind of threw out 500, 600 million as the cost of coronavirus, but geez, if you looked across our Australian sporting landscape, Ando, which I know you're across many elements of, this could be in the billions, couldn't it?
Yes, Scotty follows the sport of kings with a passion, as I do.
And AKA the last bastion of Australian sport at the moment.
Yes, I mean, racing still exists as we speak. I don't think it will for that much longer. They'll either get a positive or they will have a break, is what I'm being told. But we could have a Melbourne Cup and have a really competitive race because there's enough stayers already in the country that have been imported in recent times, or a horse like Surprise Baby or Vow and Declare, who are, you know, two of the, they would match it with any international stage as they showed in the world in the Melbourne Cup last year. So that can still happen and still be really good. But I just think we have to lower our expectations, appreciate what we've got, and get used to seeing a lot of our local homegrown stars participating, because we're not going to see the internationals for a long time.
Isn't it scary that, like, that's November. We've just ticked into April and we're contemplating life in November with maybe, you know, the race might happen, but we might not be in the stands watching. That's the scary thing that I think everyone's trying, can't get their head around.
Typically this weekend, Scotty, you'd be going up to the stall Easter gift, as you have done for many years. And, you know, that's just a great part of local Victoria gone, Australian history. You know, so such an iconic event. Melbourne, the Warrnambool 3-day carnival in early May, that's about 3 weeks off. That's now down to 2 days. Hopefully that does survive. But there's so many things been affected. I mean, and you'll miss stall. You love going to stall.
Everyone watches it on the Monday. They don't think about it for 360-odd days, but then when it's on, they go, oh, yeah, we love watching that. And yeah, those, missing things like that is going to start to really kick in. And but the footy, it's just a mystery. But where these ideas was, they're going to keep coming up.
They will. It won't be the end of it, that's for sure. But, Scotty, what about the players? If you, I know you had a little bit to do with Tom Hawkins, his fantastic column that ran in the Sunday Herald Sun on the weekend. You know, there's a few sort of long-term projects on the go where we're, you know, we're always touching base with clubs and different players from across the footy landscape. How are you finding the I guess, vibe with the players at the moment? How are they going? Because, you know, there's dates coming out the wazoo of when this could be back in action.
Well, Tom Hawkins, he's a part-time farmer, so now he's becoming a full-time farmer. He's got a massive property to run around. He sort of said at the moment, everyone's sort of finding a routine. Training-wise, he seems to think he'd be able to keep up okay and would only take 3 weeks sort of back into footy training, going worried about the footy skills and touch and stuff like that. But I think they're in that phase where they decide in the world it is. Initially, obviously, they're in the AFL bubble. Oh, we can't play. You know, how are we going to survive? Now I think they see it from a society point of view. And he's just in for the long haul. I mean, he can run around his farm and keep himself amused. He's worried a bit for some younger players who don't have the experience and knowledge of life, let alone being locked in their own house to how to figure out to still become an AFL player. But Tom Hawke's in the best place of anyone, I think.
I wonder whether you'd envy him too much, though, Ando, given that he's on that 50 hectares of farm, might need a bit of space and solitude with two kids under 3 or 4. It'd be a tough old isolation, wouldn't it, compared to you at home with a 22 and a 20-year-old? A little bit different.
It is indeed. Lossie, well, tell me, he isn't at the team, man. I shouldn't say that, because he's one of the few great players, 100-game players of Geelong's last 30 years that hasn't produced sons. As you know, there's been so many of those premiership players have sons, and Tom's got two gorgeous daughters. I saw Scotty's story on the weekend, which I really enjoyed, and Arabella and
Primrose, I think, Arabella is the second one.
Yeah,
Primrose, yeah.
Yeah, lovely names, as you'd expect of fashion girls' names. But Tom's got the two girls who'll be ready for the AFLW for the Cats in years to come. I reckon that Tom is enjoying himself. I reckon Isaac Kearney, I don't mind what he's been doing. I like the look of Isaac Kearney. He's got a good – I remember John Ralph about 4 weeks ago put the phone and he said he'd probably be the most impressive young man I've spoken to for a long time. It was Isaac Kearney. Ralphie just fell in love with him because he's such a well-mannered young bloke. And it's a shame when you see that because someone like Aaron Norton, who's one of Scotty's great young favourites of Bulldogs, but Aaron's 19, he's got years to come. Isaac's probably ready, isn't he, to really explode on the AFL as a genuine Dustin Martin type forward midfield type player, as is Jordan DeGoey. They're the players, Toby Green, they're the players we all love. And we'll talk about that soon, Loz, with the Club 10, because we're going to pick our own Club 10s, aren't we?
We are. Of course, one of the great features as the Herald Sun rolls on through this no sport crisis has been the return of the Sacked podcast series, which I absolutely love. So we'll have a little chat about that later on. Obviously, they had Ricky Nixon for the first edition of that on the weekend. So there you go, boys. You can start working on your lists of your current club tens in the Ricky Nixon theme. So get to work as we keep chatting. But you mentioned Isaac Kearney, Toby Green there, Ando. There's going to be players that benefit from this break, potentially, physically, you know, guys that are injured, your Matthew Cruiser types, of course, who were felled in that first round, could do with that extra time. Paddy McCartan, I know, was flagged as one by Ralphie in the paper a couple of weeks ago, who, you know, the extra time on the sidelines or, you know, even younger players, the extra time in the gym to maybe build up their body a bit. But, you know, there are going to be, I hate using the word casualties at a time like this, but there will be players, not just those that are about to really hit their straps into the prime of their careers, but a few that might be a little bit older too. I know Sean Burgoyne's name has sort of been thrown around in the last couple of weeks as one of those who might, hopefully, you're not seeing towards the end of them, but there'll be, you know, there'll be some that benefit and some that are cost by it, won't there?
Not on what we saw from round one with Sean Burgoyne's three clutch goals, because that was a close game with the Lions at the MCG and Gary Ablett's performance for Geelong. He was clearly one of Geelong's two best players against GWS alongside Mitch Duncan. The thing, players I speak to, Loz, or people in footy, what they miss the most is competition, because they are such competitive beasts. And that's just part of their nature. And that is part of who they are, what makes them so great, that they love going out and seeking that competition. Not all of us want to do that, but not all of us want to compete all the time. Some of us shy away from it. These blokes and the AFLW women, just the same, they just seek competition. I spoke to a player the weekend and his comment was, I'll need something soon to compete against. I'll need to test myself against another player. And he was talking about doing a 3K run time, putting it up and seeing how someone of his description body-wise, that's weight, I'm not talking about a 100K player, I'm talking about an 85K player, and send it around the AFL group and getting that type of competition going, which I think is a really good idea. It's sort of like a footy Olympics, if you like. And they need that in their lives.
I like it. I don't know about the lack of physicality, though. That's probably the only thing. They can all run laps of the park and bounce a footy alone, but, geez, not going with any tackles or anything like that for months on end is going to be interesting. What about the draft, Scotty? There's talk that, you know, maybe raise the draft age, you know, in conjunction with further conversations around cutting lists. Where do you think? Do you think we could probably do with a list cut? Do we give the 18-year-olds maybe a year off? They're all obviously dealing with getting their year 12 done too at the moment, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and they're missing out on a year of football. So, I mean, the league has been moving towards raising the draft age to 19. This is the perfect year to do it. They're basically suggesting this draft crop would just go around again next year. So you don't really have a draft. Like you said, cut list and then not be able to, which is unfair a bit. They're just unlucky, the kids, the elite kids of this year, because potentially the AFL might say, well, the cutting list, it's an unusual year. We'll address it next November and you're allowed to play in the NAB League. Yeah, so to play that next year, this same crew, I think that's where it's heading, because while recruiters have seen these kids since they're 14, 15, 16, a lot of them, you know, there's examples, Marcus Bontempelli, plenty of gun jump in this year. This is when they find some reason, in a couple of months, they go from nobody to top 10 and get in the AFL. Players aren't going to get the chance to do that. So that's a very interesting development. I don't think they'll have a draft.
Really?
I don't think, because the season will be still going November, December. I think they'll just focus on that. You might get access to, say, 3 or 4 kids from around the country if you want to in a mini draft. But then in November next year, do it properly with the draft age lifted, NAB league age lifted. I think they'll redo the whole thing.
You talk about players bolting like Pontempelli did. That can happen so late in the year. He was sort of around August, September, I reckon. Mm. And certainly Tim Taranto was one like that. Tim ended up being taken at pick 2 behind Andy McGrath and ahead of, I'm trying to think, who got out to pick 3 that year. But Tim was during the year, I remember, because one of my boys played with Tim at St. Kevin's, and he was spoken about as a top 20, and then a top 15, and maybe even a top 10. And then suddenly he goes pick 2 because he developed throughout the year. He got stronger. He just got better. But I'm very strong on the draft age should be lifted, Loz. Should be. I've always thought that. I always thought that it was too young. They've got too much on their plate. And when you have boys and girls, and hopefully you will, Loz, in years to come, go through year 12 and the demands of year 12, then if they're playing sport on top of that, particularly championship type sport where they're playing in the national champs and the under 18s, it's just too much. It really is. And they get into that. I've had a friend who's just been through it at a league club, and he's the happiest he's been after 3 years in the system, just to be relieved of all those pressures. And they don't need it that young. They don't need it at age 18. Get them out the year before they get those pressures.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because it all comes to a head within a few weeks of each other too. That whole year of, as you say, footy pressure, school pressure, then the exams start in October. The draft comes straight after that. They've got to fit the meetings in. I couldn't agree more. Put it off for a year and deal with it then. But I gave you the question without notice a little bit earlier, boys, about the Club 10. I mentioned before Ricky Nixon sat down for the first edition of Sacked with our colleagues Glenn McFarlane and John Ralph. It's been an incredible podcast series, and what better time, I suppose, to kick off the 2020 version when we're all at home and looking for things to watch and listen to and read. So that was the first one. Some absolute belters to come, judging by some of the faces that were rolling through our Herald Sun podcast studio in the weeks before we were all sent packing to work from home. But the Club 10 was such a fixture of Ricky's time as a player manager, wasn't it? Of course, the real sort of first swag of superstars of the game that were paid like it too. I'll just reel off some names of that first edition of the Club 10 that was headed up by Ricky, the likes of Ablett, Gavin Brown, Wayne Carey, Jason Dunstall, Tony Lockett, Stewie Lowe, Gary Lyon, all names that Scotty have featured in our top 20 series of the modern era that has been rolling out over the last week or so from all of the Melbourne clubs. If we were to have a 2020 Club 10, we throw the name superstar around a little bit. I'm sort of the school of thought that there's only really 4 or 5 genuine superstars in the game at any one time. But who do you reckon Chicken would be first knocking on their door from this year's edition of the game?
You mentioned who he had. It would be akin to basically Dustin Martin, Patrick Dangerfield, Patrick Cripps, Nathan Spice, help me out, Tim Kelly. 10 of the very, like, he had the best of the best. And imagine them all being managed by the same person. Imagine the power they would wield. They have a lot of power anyway, but there's the first 5. The next 5 could be, Tim Taranto, half the DWS. Easily, that's what Ricky Nixon had. It's extraordinary to think the power he had back then.
Yeah, I've compiled my top 10, Ando. The two giants in my team are Josh Kelly and Stephen Cornelio.
I'm surprised that I thought you would have gone with your Peninsula grammar bias for Lachie Whitfield.
He's on my unlucky to miss list, which I must admit is quite long as well.
You have to have Scotty, the one Scotty said, you've got to have. I'd have Dusty number 1. There's something about the bad boy who's not too bad. He's got a touch of naughtiness about him. And so for that reason, Dusty ticks that box beautifully. And he's kind of come good anyway, Dusty. Everyone loves him these days. when it's all said and done. And I'd put Jordan Degoe in there in the same bracket. Same type of player, really exciting player. If he can keep his head screwed on, not get too many more tats. I don't know where he's going to fit him, actually. We're looking at that photo the other day. Interesting sideline on that, Scotty and Lozzo. Years ago, went back to St. Kevin's for their footy night, and they had a special guest who was Jordan Degoe. It would have been 2015. He'd just been drafted, and I had to interview him, and he's a pretty shy, nice bloke. And I said, now, you've been hanging around with Dane Swan a little bit. He hasn't rubbed off on you too much in terms of wanting to get a tattoo. He said, I can tell you one thing. I love Swanee, but I'll never get a tattoo.
Oh. Well, look at the photos of him in the Herald Sun the other day with the big stomach piece.
Yeah. I'd have Patrick Cripps for sure.
Yep.
Patrick Cripps is the sort of young man that every mum would love to call their son. I'd have Isaac Heaney. You've got to have some interstate representation. He's another boy. He's very similar to Patrick Cripps. And obviously Marcus Bond and Pearly. I'd also have Toby Green. When I talk about the bad boy, and I think there's a lot of people have some empathy for Toby Green. You know, he's had a difficult upbringing, which he's spoken about and been open about. Wonderful player. But I reckon Toby will end up his career. I think he could be extremely marketable. Maybe one of Gorn and Grundy. Buddy and Jack Rewald, as much as I love them, probably they've had their day in the sun. In that sense, and you've got to go for a really young player. Scotty mentioned Tim Durato. Look, Aaron Norton had one touch or two touches in the first round this year against Collingwood, but I'd still have Aaron Norton, I reckon, because he's just so darn exciting.
Well done, guys. There's some good editions of Sacked coming up too, so keep an ear out for those. A Melbourne/Geelong-related character appearing this week, so I won't give too much away, but that's all revealed on Saturday. So another great addition there from Macca and Ralphie. Scotty, it's your turn. You're up on the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. It is time for The Whisper. What have you got for us?
The Whisper, well, we mentioned how a lot of things have been thrown up and down regarding when the season will be back. My mail is the CEO's initially looking at August, but the big but was, I think they're thinking fans won't be until the final, which would be potentially December. So we start without fans, and then it might be even till December before we allowed to get in to watch our hero.
And really, Ando, even if it was a final between Frio and Port Adelaide played in Tassie at a quarantine hub, and fans were suddenly allowed in, you'd have 110,000 knocking down the door of York Park, wouldn't you, by that point?
If those two clubs played in it, Lozzo. I keep reading from learned people that the club with the deepest list is going to be the one best suited, which obviously makes sense. And what I saw in round one and what I've seen of the rest of their list, I think Collingwood's in a very good place, short of Brodie Grundy falling over in the meantime. So I would expect the Woods, hopefully, to be there. I say hopefully because I reckon Nathan Buckley deserves a premiership. I really kind of think that. I mean, I think Nathan Buckley, he's done everything but, hasn't he? And he's conducted himself with such style over the journey for the last 10 years. So, I think that'd be quite fitting. And I couldn't give a stuff if it was a premiership with an asterisk or not. It's a premiership and everyone's playing. They know what they're playing for and whoever wins it will deserve it.
Well, Scotty, sounds like our spring carnival activities of years gone by might be a little bit more footy-related than NAG-related at this rate, but we'll certainly keep an eye on that. We know the Whisper gets very good mail, so we'll definitely keep it close. While we're on you, your top 20 Geelong players of the modern era ran in the Tuesday paper. Now tell us, how do you solve a problem like an Ablett? You had one at one, the other at two. How did you split them? Talk us through it.
Seen Gary Senior do his things, and I think just for his complete freakiness, and he kicked over 120 goals when he was 34. I mean, stuff like that's just madness. Gary Junior, better CV, more awards, obviously Brownlows and everything like that. So I just think what Gary Senior did, I don't think I've seen a better player. So it was quite easy for me, but Junior CV stacked up with anyone.
How's the feedback been? Because I know some of our colleagues that have wheeled out their top 20s over the last few weeks have A, either turned the phone off or B, changed their order 48,000 times before they were submitted for the paper. How have you found the last 24 hours?
I think I was quite lucky in the sense that that 2000 team, you know, mid-2000, you know, they won three premierships. So I ended up having 14 of them in, and because they were so dominant and they were all legitimate superstars. They all played 250, 300 games. They'd all been All-Australian, Norm Smith. So there's a whole clump. I didn't have to really search for people. And then from the era just before it was quite obvious. You know, Gary Senior, Buddha Hocking, Paul Couch were the elite midfielders of the time. And I got Barry Stoneham in because he had two or three years that were unbelievable before injury ruined him. And Peter Riccardi actually scraped in right at 20, but for his longevity, and he was just a very, very good player for a long time. So compared to some of our colleagues, Lauren, I think I was lucky in that no one could argue how good that clump of Geelong players were from the 2007 to 2011.
Yes, I believe you may have challenged one colleague who will go unnamed, but the initials GG in the Superscore edition on Wednesday about his Hawthorn list. Is that right?
Wow. Yes, I may have asked if he was related to Sam Mitchell, given Sam was number one, and Dunstall, Frank, Hodge, even five was extraordinary. So the only issue I had was where to put Patrick Dangerfield. 4 years at Geelong, 95 games, won a Brownlow, three BNFs out of 4 years, second, I think, in another Brownlow. An extraordinary 4 years. What's missing has been the finals. They've made it, obviously. Has he played at his ultimate in the finals? Probably not. He's still been very good. So I flunked him at 10, and I think that was the hardest part of the Geelong one. Where do you, how did you rate him compared to, you know, Chapman's and all these sort of people who've been there and done it on the biggest stage?
No, I think I'm looking forward to seeing how Gil answers this one in the Q&A, because I think he was pretty happy to be having a bit of social distancing over the last week or so, but it's been good fodder for the likes of Fox Footy Live too of an afternoon, which I've really enjoyed having on in the background as we work away. But Ando, it's time to put you under the microscope as this newest incarnation of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. It is time for Best of the Best. You're simply the best. Now, talk us through this one. You've gone to Icon Park on Royal Parade for this week's edition. The best Carlton team of the last 50 years. I'm leaving this to you because I do not envy this task at all. They're named in position. I'll let you take it from here.
With that, Loz, it's, I'm totally confident that the Carlton team of the last 50 years will be far and away the best of any club team. West Coast Eagles have only had a short history. They could put together a great team from when they started in 1987. North Melbourne will have a ripper side too, but Carlton is a standout. They've just got absolute champions, whether it be Silvani, Southby, Dool, Williams, Koutafidis, Bradley, Kernahan, Johnston, Jezalinko, Fofola, Nichols, Ratton, Judd. Just extraordinary list of supreme talent. So to really challenge myself after picking it, we spoke with David Parkin. David Parkin coached Carlton in 15 seasons, 11 finals years, and three premierships. Just an extraordinary record, Parker. And he's either played against, coached against, or coached every player just about since 1970. So he was really interested in his comments on it, as he always is, David Parkin, who's currently down at Point Lonsdale, not far from you, Scotty, and doing a bit of bike riding and a bit of running, keeping himself fit at age 77. I think there was one player I didn't have in it, Loz, that David disagreed with, was Trevor Keogh, two-time best and fairest winner from the 70s. He thought he should have been in, and probably Gary Crane, who did play a bit of his career in the 60s as well. But then it's a matter of, you know, how do you fit him in? But fun thing to do, so I'm happy to cop the flak like Big Gil Gardner has. I think I'm with Scotty on. I'm obviously a Geelong supporter, and I read Scott's list today. And I don't know. Scott knows me well enough to know if I didn't agree, I would say it. But I thought it was an outstanding list. Both my boys poured over it over lunch, and we all discussed it and thought the same thing. And there's not really anyone there you think, gee. The only one I'd say, this will be interesting, And some Geelong players will say this. Gary Ablett Sr., clearly the best. Gary Ablett Jr., obviously 7 of those years he wasn't at Geelong. So from 2011 onwards. So that's why it's easier to make his father number one. But I reckon a lot of, well, not a lot, but a few Geelong players would have Matthew Scarlett ahead of Gary Jr. in their Geelong careers. There you go.
I'm not surprised to hear that. Not surprised to hear that. He certainly changed the way the game was played. Good old Scarlett. Son getting 30 touches from full back. Now, on your Carlton team, Anna, Wayne Harms, is he a back pocket?
Yeah, Wayne Harms played enough footy in the back pocket, Scotty. Parker was quite comfortable having him there. He did say, though, there'd be times in games when he'd be thrown in on the ball or even forward where he could kick three goals in a quarter. But, yeah, Wayne Harms, I'm comfortable with him in the back pocket. I reckon he started there in 1979 when he won the Norm Smith Medal, and I think he moved into the... I think Jezza moved. It was captain coach. Jezza Linko moved back and Harms moved in. But, yeah, that's okay. It's not totally out of position if... but I understand your query.
Just before we...
And Brett Ratten... Oh, sorry. Go, Lauren.
Brett Ratten... A little bit hard with Brett Ratten. I thought... He ended up competing with Patrick Cripps as an on-baller, Ruck Rover, we used to call them. And I just thought if Patrick Cripps' career's finished now, Ratten would be ahead of him. Whether that's the case when Cripps finishes is maybe another matter.
Well, we might have to look at this one in coming years, Ando. Hey, just before we catch up with Parco, talk us through. So you mentioned Wayne Harms in the back line, obviously Steve Silvani, Jess Southby, but geez, Cade Simpson must have been tough, really stiff to miss on this.
Yeah, Coach Simpson, 300 games, and Wayne Harms probably just over half of that. But if you compare those two footballers, Harms is just an explosive match winner. Cade Simpson's an incredibly durable, tough, high possession winning backline player, wonderful player. But no, look, I didn't find that a hard decision, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, well, obviously.
And Andrew McKay misses.
Really stiff. And I see Andy a bit. I did think about that. I just had to get David McKay into the side, no relation, and that meant Bruce Toole and Ken Hunter going on the back flanks. That's where Andy McKay would have played, and I had Hunter and Doyle ahead of Andy McKay, but Peter Dean's probably another one who's very unlucky in the back line to miss.
Well, as I say, Ando, I don't envy you with this task, but we would encourage all of our listeners to give it a crack, have a go at your team, your Carlton team of the last 50 years. We'll get yours up online at heraldsun.com.au, Ando. But you caught up with that man who you mentioned knows these players and this club in particular inside out, of course, three-time Carlton Premiership coach David Parkin, for his thoughts on your best team of the last 50 years. So let's catch up with what he had to say.
End up, we'll keep our end up, and they will know that they've been playing against the famous Old Dark Blues.
When choosing Carlton's best team over the past 50 years, there's no better person to ask his opinion than David Parkin, who coached the Blues in two separate stints. 15 years in total, 355 winning games, which is quite remarkable. 11 final series in those 15 years, and of course, 3 premierships. Welcome, David.
Thanks, John. Yeah, it's a great memory and a great exercise to look at. Actually, I think of the 22 players you named, I coached 17 of them. And the ones, of course, Walls, Jezelenko, Nichols, Judd, and Cripps. Didn't have the opportunity. So when you look at it, that is an incredibly talented team that you've put together, which I think very few other teams in the competition could match.
Start of the back line, fullback and back pocket, you coach Stephen Silvani and Jeff Southby. They both have to be in the side, don't they?
Yeah, and as talented players in the sense that they were unbelievable athletes as well as being terrific footballers. So when you talk about that, with Harms was in the back pocket, little bait, wasn't he? I think he probably stands out. English and a few others there were extremely good, but South Sylvani company down there are as good as the competition seen in my, in fact, I think I threw the vote that got Sylvani the fullback of the century. Other people were a bit annoyed about that, and I think Jeff Southie thought he was too, was a bit upset. So you know, it's just not only the talent, the football talent, but the athleticism. You think of Arms and his capacity to get in the air and the power running that he had. They all happen to be, or not all, but most of those happen to be what I call, you know, footballers who were in their own right very good athletes too, John.
Adam Simpson was one who could play that small back pocket, and he's, of course, played 300 games. And as great as he's been, I just felt with Wayne Harms, if David Parkin's coaching that side, you've got the ability to switch Harms onto the ball, up forward if you need to, which Cade Simpson probably couldn't do that to the same effect as Wayne Harms could. Not many players could.
No, I think that's a fair comment. And in a time, again, back a fair way, but in the last century that we're talking about, the versatility and flexibility of players wasn't nearly as well what's was sought up and recognised and trained and practised for. We had a phenomenal number of players in that team. You just named a couple there that, like Harms, who could do incredible things in centre bounces in the middle and could go forward and kick a bundle within the one game. And that makes some pretty valuable team members.
Halfback line, David. I thought Bruce Steele obviously has to be there somewhere, whether it's halfback, yep, flank, or centre halfback. And you've got Ken Hunter, who probably demands selection as well. Then it came down to players like Peter Dean, who you coached and was such a good player for you. Andy Mackay, who was an All Australian Best and Fairest winner, who could easily have gone in there. David Mackay is someone I don't know if he gets undersold. And perhaps not as much as he used to, but I just thought he has to be in the side for mine, David Mackay. But you played against him and probably coached him and coached, yep, against him, actually, all three.
Yeah, and he had a, a unique, spectacular side to his game. I mean, he's probably as good a high mark. Maybe not as consistent as some other players, but in terms of taking incredible marks, he did it week in and week out. He had this ability to throw himself near. Another one, of course, who played right back on the back line and played forward with a great deal of success too. So I think it was a hard one. I loved Peter Dean, but Peter was a very methodical player. He was a strong mark, but not a spectacular one. I think you're right. I think the selection of David Mackay, centre halfback, in the balance of things, is correct.
Centre Greg Williams, he's someone you coached, and he won a Norm Smith medal under you and a Brownlow medal under you, and so he probably picks himself. Wings, Gary Crane played obviously in the 60s, so this, yep, this starts from 1970, so Gary played probably half his career after that, and he was named in Carlton's team of the century, so that's how, yep, highly thought of. Yeah, that's exactly right. But Kurt Afidis, you had on a wing in 95 in your premiership side.
He did win the game by going back for a start and stopping them and then going forward and kicking those incredible goals. I might debate that, but he's got to be in the team. In what position, I'm not sure. Gary Crane, I had huge, he was on my list here, huge admiration for, had a strong and as consistent, as brave as any player playing that role that I've seen. So he'd be one that I would have thought was very stiff to miss out on selection in some way, either on the ground or on the interchange.
Yeah, okay. And Craig Bradley, again, has to be in there. Wing, he could play that role if need be. Well, he did play that role for you quite a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question about Brattles. I'd be interested to ask him as to where he thought he played his best football. I think he'd like to think he was an on-ball that could go forward and kick a goal. But I believe, like you, that he probably played his best football for Carlton on the wing.
Half-forward line. Stephen Kernaghan would be competing with, as a pure centre-half forward, Mark McClure, who was a three-time premiership player, two of them under you, 81-82. And Robert Walsh, who's probably a little bit different than McClure, and he's probably a bit more mobile. But Kernaghan stands out, I would have thought, a centre forward.
Yeah, Stix is as good a player in the sense that I've coached, particularly in key positions. And he was remarkable in that he was able to produce, a bit like Wayne Johnson in a sense, he was able to produce things in moments in games, big games particularly, that the team requires. So his leadership was consistent throughout, but he was also extremely good, John, when something needed to be done. He had the capacity to do that. I saw a replay the other night where he had the chance to win the game. Now he had to kick a point and he missed everything. So his kicking sometimes wasn't as good as the rest of his play.
You mentioned Wayne Johnson, who's, his big game record is just extraordinary. So he would pick himself on his finals performances, as would another. Ellis Jezelenko obviously has to be on the side. I'm interested, David, when you get forward to that forward line, which is Rod Ashman, Brendan Favola and Robert Walls, where do you sit with that line?
Yeah, I think Walls, he probably played his better football at the other end of the ground, but that's debatable. Rob thinks himself, I think, good mates with me, thinks himself as a centre-half forward. I don't think he claimed to be better than Kernaghan, but I think that selection was a good one. When I thought about it, and long and hard, I think you've probably got one right through. Nichols and Fitzpatrick used to go into that spot and do well. I'm sorry that Madden, in a sense, though he was never a tall going, he was never a tall going forward to take marks and kick goals. So I think in the wash-up, Walls is probably the right selection for that team.
And then Favola, well, just by weight of goals, I think, and his ability levels were extreme, weren't they?
Yeah, no, I only had 1 year with Brendan. I think his first game ever, and that game we played on was a Christmas Eve or something. He kicked a dozen goals or whatever it was. No, he had talent. I'm not sure I'd like to coach him, but that's another question.
No, exactly.
But I think on sheer talent, I think he was a brilliant handler of the ball, but a magnificent kick. I know he caused a few problems along the way, and it was sad that he didn't finish his career where he started. But a pure talent. Oh, Brendan's, you go to the football to watch Brendan play.
And Rod Ashman, I picked Chris Judd as an on-baller. He's probably not a typical first rover, as you and I knew growing up, but kicked a lot of goals. And I think of the Rovers, and that's you coach Kenny Sheldon and you coach Alex Marcoux and Jimmy Buckley could play that role. To me, Ashman might have been the best.
Oh, look, I have no argument with all that. I would have had him as the number one. I watched Judd play, obviously didn't have the pleasure of being able to coach him. I think you've got that right too. Rod was tough as, really had a nasty streak to him. He could mix it with everybody, but he had great ability too, John, above his head. He was actually a better mark than most people thought and a very accurate kick for goal. He certainly deserves to be there, and the team is better with him as a forward pocket player.
Now, with the Ruck Rover role as we knew it, it came down to me to Brett Ratten or Patrick Cripps, and I'm not sure that Patrick Cripps, I think he might, by the end of his career, he may be saying he's even gone past the great Brett Ratten, but on what they've both done to date, I thought Ratten had to be picked there in the 18.
Yeah, look, I don't have any real argument. I think Rats is one of the most complete footballers that I've ever seen. His understanding of the game too as a player while playing. If Rats suggested we make a move or do something or play differently, I immediately did it because he was always right. He was a terrific team player, started, I think, from memory in the back pocket. I think that might be right, John. Started in the back pocket, but once went to midfield, became one of the class acts for a long, long time in that particular role, won best and fairest, etc. I think Ratten is the right choice. The other bloke can really play, but I think Ratten is the right one.
You mentioned the Rucks. John Nichols played until 1975, and he played some very big finals in the early 70s. So if John Nichols is available, he has to be there. And then I was struggling with Harry Madden as to because he was a magnificent player for you and Mike Fitzpatrick, three premierships and obviously a captain as well. So where do you sit on those two?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a Madden fan, I must admit. Probably the best tap ruckman in terms of being able to direct it where he wanted to that I had ever seen, including Farmer, Nichols and company, and Fitzy. It's a real, I've got great admiration for Nichols. I thought he was, I played against him, of course, didn't have the opportunity to coach him, but everyone at the Carlton Football Club thinks he's the most influential player of the club's history. And that's people before John and people after him. So on that basis, I think you're right. He has to be in the team and is the leader, the number one ruckman. I would have loved Madden to be in, but Madden wouldn't have the versatility that Fitzpatrick had, who played centre forward on the ball and in the pocket to kick goals. Good leader. Not so good, Fitzy, when the game wasn't terribly important. But Fitzy was good in the big games at the big moments, and probably deserves his spot.
Then you come down to interchange. We mentioned Patrick Cripps, and obviously Mike Fitzpatrick's there to relieve John Nichols. Patrick Cripps can come on and play a number of roles given he's 195 centimetres. You may differ with the other two. Jim Buckley, and you coached him in 83, and I think at the time, I reckon you made a comment that at that year you thought he was probably in the best three or four players in the country.
He was. No doubt about it. I mean, Jimmy was all over the place, sadly, as a person and as a player. But when he was fit and well and up and going, which he was in that period of time, very few players in the competition could match him. He had good endurance, fantastic speed, great courage, and was extremely skillful on both sides of his body. Wasn't great overhead like Ashman was, but had all the other attributes. I'm pleased that you've actually named him. I think that he deserves the right to be in there. But there are, and you would have had the same, there are, John, plenty that I think that Peter Motley never got a chance to show what he was capable of doing. And I think he might have ended up on a half-back flank in that side. I'm a bit disappointed Trevor Keogh. I thought I might have had Trevor Keogh before the bench blokes in Buckley or Sheldon. I think Trevor, in his time, played well over 200 games, and I think he won a couple of B&Fs in what's a great side at that time. So he's one that I think's pretty stiff to miss out on. I think the current bloke, very few have played as consistently as well as Cade Simpson over the length of period of his tenure there, and I think he's probably a real stiff one to miss out as a current player still playing great footy.
A couple of other old Carlton players I spoke with, they were very strong on Trevor Keogh should be in the 22 somewhere. So I think they agree with you there. I went for Kenny Sheldon. That could be a personal bias. I think Sheldon sometimes gets smothered a bit with Ashman and Buckley and Namaku. But somebody that can kick 47 goals in a season, I think.
Not too far. There's great debate there. I think you probably have with yourself, because Keogh was really tough as well. You know, really had a nasty streak to him, but he could run, he could kick goals, he was reasonable overhead, and a very loyal Carlton man over time. And you think that the past, that you've got, never mentioned Sean Sylvania or Adrian Galli. There was a couple of blokes who I found as opposition to them as good at competitors, you know, in terms of the way they went about their footy, and long careers in terms of the games played and the honours that were bestowed on them. So it's a good side, but there are seven or eight who probably, we've certainly talked about them, probably deserve their place as well.
Yeah, Adrian Gallagher, Serge Silvani both played in the 70s, you're quite right, although I think Serge finished in 71 and
he did, yeah.
Gags had left, he went to North Melbourne under the, no, Bulldogs, yeah. Did he? And the, yeah, no,
two. Did he?
Yeah, he went there 3 years. He won a best and fairest in 1970, Gags, and a great premiership year. So he's and he's first rover in their team of the century. But I just said he didn't play enough years in that period. That's mighty knock. He'd be disappointed with you, Adrian. But stay healthy, David, in these extraordinary times. And good to speak to you as always. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, John. Really enjoyed it.
Well, Scotty, Ando, that's another edition of the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. And Scotty, if there's one thing I know with Ando, it's that every time we walk in to the Herald Sun office, when we were allowed to, that is, he's always got something great to watch. That's what we need in times like this. I started watching the Sunderland doco a couple of nights ago on Netflix. I'm two episodes in, very much hooked, Sunderland till I die, but I'm taking recommendations. Ando, you're always good for a good watch. What are you looking at the moment?
Let's try Agent Hamilton, SBS On Demand, spy thriller, very good. Yeah, you won't be disappointed. And have you watched, either of you watched The Tiger King yet?
Does my laugh give it away?
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, okay.
And I didn't go for it and I stopped.
My significant other, he gave up after we watched two episodes together and, he said, not for me, bit too left of centre. But I must admit there was something that just hooked me in. I think just because it was so far-fetched from, you know, the lives that we lead here in sheltered old Melbourne. Yes, I stuck it out and I binged it pretty quickly actually in a few days last week. So I don't know if I should be ashamed to say it or not, but yes, I've watched it. Scotty, are you a streamer? What are you watching?
Yeah, my son told me to get into the Ozark, which I think a lot of people are in, and just finished first series. Jason Bateman, and I think it took me in, so I've got a couple more to go.
All right, well, keep watching, keep listening. We're looking forward to more recommendations from you guys in coming weeks and I guess seeing whether we're quarantine hubbing this time next week. But no doubt there'll be still plenty to talk about throughout the week, heraldsun.com.au, and we'll see you guys in the paper each and every day too, Super Score and all the rest of it, lists going left, right and centre. So still plenty to cover off, even though footy is in hiatus. We'll be here with you each and every week for the Herald Sun Footy Podcast.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.